Sounds True presents Energy Anatomy, Tape 2, with Carolyn Mace. I'm going to now weave the energy of the second chakra, introduce you into what's in that part of your body, and weave that in with the first. I want to repeat that the first chakra is your connection to tribal or group energy. From the group, you develop your position within the group. So your second chakra, which is located at the sexual genital area, your hip, and the base of your spine, this contains your relationship to power on the one-on-one level, your need to control others. Anybody have a need to control this? Your need to control events, your need to control, period, and you fill in the blank. It's your need to control other people, the way things happen, the way people believe, whatever it is, your need to control. Now I want you to imagine somebody in your life, just one person. How many of you can think of one person that you are vitally interested and invested in controlling? All right. Now, I want you to now imagine that if I said to you, why are you so interested in controlling that person? What kind of answer would you give? Would you say, well, that person needs me? But the truth is, what you really are doing is you want to keep that person weak so that they need you. You want to keep them weak and damaged and wounded so that they need you. And that's going to cost you. And that will cost you your spirit. Now, I'm going to speak angel to you. This is Angel 101. And I'm going to say to you, what are you doing? And you're going to say, I am investing part of my circuitry with the command to control that person. I want to influence that person's thinking process. I want to keep me a vital part of that person's thinking process. That will cost you a great deal of your energy every day, and in every way. You are transmitting a part of your spirit on mission to infiltrate that person's energy. And likewise, I presume there are people who are equally invested in controlling you. And so you are the recipient of energetic information. I want you to imagine that your body operates, this system that I am talking about operates exactly the way email does. There is no difference. Every time you have a thought about someone, you transmit it and you put it into their email box. Email for energetic mail. This is good. I like this. It's literally energetic mail. That's exactly what you are doing. I am convinced that whole form of the tribal creation of all these computer databases, all of that is a complete physical metaphor and creation of what I am talking about in terms of the way we work energetically. We've duplicated ourselves in the computer form, okay? So now we have to learn to play by energetic rules. And what I'm telling you about is your second chakra connects you to everybody and everything you want to control. Now, how many of you have ever even paid attention to what you want to control or how much you invest in what you want to control? You haven't even got a clue. This is the part of yourself that is connected to every one of your sexual interests and every one of your sexual memories and everyone you are sexually invested in, involved with, regretful over, whatever it is. Your entire sexuality is in this part of your body. Now, let's say you grew up in a tradition that said, you can only have sex if you were married. I won't mention what tradition that might be. I swore I'd give that up. Starts with a C. Can I tell you a funny story? I was going to England one time, and I had to do a story on this woman who claimed to channel the Blessed Virgin Mary. Now, in my background, right? I mean, than fighting words, right? It brings out your first chakra, tribal warfare, right? It really does. So she doesn't like Americans, and I went to interview her, and I walked into her place, and she lived in one of these sort of, this is like a classic British old movie, you know, those funky places where you have, it looks like potluck at a laundromat, but they have a title, so it doesn't matter what shape the furniture is in. And she literally commanded me. She said, "Sit there." And I fell backwards into this chair, and I broke it. It was a straw chair, and I went down, and now my knees are hitting my breast, and I can't get out of this chair. And I have everything she heard about Americans, crude, loud, everything. I busted a piece of furniture. And said, right? In the meantime, I'm asking her how she created this product that she is selling all over England. And she said she got it from the Blessed Virgin Mary. So picture this. While I am sunk in this chair and I can't get out, and I'm like this, and I said, "So you channel the Blessed Virgin Mary," and I'm trying to get out of this chair, and she says, "That's correct." And I said, "Yeah? Well, I'll see your virgin, and I'll raise you one angel." And she kicked me out. I never got the interview I thought was. But it was completely tribal warfare and the second chakra, which is, I couldn't. Competition is in your second chakra, right? Everybody you feel competitive with or toward is in this part of your body, is in your second chakra, right? And when you feel a particular competitive relationship with someone, you literally will transmit energy from your body to them, and it hits you like you're being electrocuted by them. So much so that there's a rush of heat that just rushes through your body every time you think about them, because the moment you think about them, you are touching their circuit that's connecting to you, a live wire. Now, we've literally used the expression a live wire. There's a reason why we use these terms. They're really very accurate. You've actually really hit a live wire. That's part of your second chakra. Your second chakra connects you to all of your financial issues and to your relationship with money, as does your first. Your first and second chakra are sort of built on these two issues. The second chakra is almost a more refined version, a more individual version of what you've been taught by the tribe. So the tribe teaches you all of your superstitions about money, and your second chakra shows how you invest your energy into financial dealings. If your tribe taught you never trust anybody with money, and you decide to believe that, in your second chakra, you will literally attract to yourself people you can't trust with money. Do you see what I mean? And you will create that reality with that circuitry. You warehouse all of your financial issues in your lower back, by the way. Lower back pain, sciatic pain, bad discs in the lower back area. This is caused by financial stress. So energetically, this is where you warehouse all your financial strain. Now, let's say that you've invested your energy into a thought form that says, like a case I had where somebody had worked for a company for a long time, and this person had invested his circuits in the idea that this corporation would take care of him all of his life, and that when he retired, he would have a pension plan. Okay? Well, recently, that system of tribal management, shall we say, has gone down the tubes. And people are getting fired left, right, and center. And this investment is not paying off the way they were told. Now, I want you to think about this. With the trauma is that they've invested their spirit into a perception with the idea that this perception was a truth, T-R-U-T-H. The T-H at the end of that word means eternally truth. It can be truth versus true. Let me give you the difference. It may be true that you're working for a company, but there's no truth to the fact that anyone can guarantee you that they can take care of you. There's a difference between what is true and what is truth, right? So this person had invested in that only to find out that, in fact, they let him go at age 50-some, can't get another job. The trauma that millions of people are finding themselves in, and the consequences that they are feeling violated and betrayed, and the trauma is hitting in the prostate system. So there's a tremendous increase in prostate cancer, because this is where violations of that level hit. Why? Because we have connected the energetics of sexuality, power, and money. I find it very, very fascinating that during Desert Storm, the Israeli army was ordered not to fight. They were commanded not to fight, even though they knew that they were sitting targets. And mind you, that tribe had taken a vow. What was the vow from the Holocaust? Never again. What does that vow mean? Never again would they allow themselves to be slaughtered without putting up a fight. Now, they were sitting in the Middle East, knowing full well that the targets of all the guns were to destroy them. And what were they doing? Putting their guns down and violating their own vow. What happened? Following Desert Storm, impotency and prostate cancer went up 70% in Israel. Why that part of the body? Because we associate chutzpah, to use that term, guts, balls, the ability to defend oneself, the fight or flight mechanism, with your second chakra. And we also have this sense that money brings power to this part of the body. The more money you have, the more sexual energy you have. There's no truth to it. It's just that we've decided that the two go together. So what happens is when someone makes a lot of money, they find themselves having a tremendous increase in sexual energy, in sexual eroticism. You could feel ugly as a troll, and if you won the lottery, you would feel that you had the ability to seduce anybody you laid your eyes on. You could be drop-dead gorgeous, and if you suddenly had a financial trauma, you could not find any sexual energy in you if someone put a gun to your head. That is because we have our wires attached to the fact that financial energy equals sexual energy. And similarly, that's why when you make a lot of money, you are no longer cheating on your husband or wife. You can afford a mistress. And if you make enough money, the tribe says you can bring your mistress out in public. It can become public, and it's just fine. Because money grants you sexual privilege. What kind of privilege does money grant you? These are tribal laws we've agreed to. And that's that the more money you make, the less tribal structure you have to attend to. The tribal rules don't apply to you. And the more money you make, you are no longer considered an oddball, you're considered eccentric. The second chakra is your connection to your relationship, to attitudes about sexuality, your sexual attractiveness. What makes you attractive? If you need money to be attractive, if you need success to be attractive, if you need to feel that you have to accomplish something creatively in order to feel good about yourself sexually, if you believe this, if you've connected those two dots, then trust me, you are financing that relationship from this part of your body. And if your creativity is violated, you'll pay for it in your ovaries or in your prostate. Okay? This is also the part of the body that records your entire relationship with rape and incest. Now, I've never met anybody who hasn't been raped or incested. And that's because I define these two things as energetic violations as well as physical. There is physical rape and there's energetic rape. There's physical incest and there's energetic incest. Okay? Physical rape happens all the time when someone physically rapes your boundaries and you do not have the capacity to say to somebody, you have violated my boundaries, right? Or you don't have the capacity to stand up for yourself. What you will do is you will log a memory of who violated you. Let me just ask, how many of you hold thoughts of people that you feel have violated you or feel violated? Okay, most of you would say yes, you have. And how many of you feel actively violated by someone now, today? Feel like someone has actively violated you? Anybody? Okay, yes. How many of you have ever gone through an act of betrayal? Okay, so the majority of your hands go up. And when I ask you now, how many of you are still processing having felt betrayed by someone? You're not done with it. You haven't got closure. Okay. That part of you that still feels betrayed, I want you to picture that that's part of your energy leaving your system and going to that person every day to remind them that you are still angry at what he or she has done to you. You are literally sending and transmitting your spirit to that person. And the part of your body that that comes from is your second chakra. One of the points that I want to reiterate again and again and again and connect to you is that for everyone, imagine, I mean, there are, what, 30 people in this room. If I decided that 15 of you violated me, so I would plug in 10% of my energy to you, 2% to you, and I'd randomly go through. And by the time I'm done and dressed in the morning, I've got 60 to 80% of my energy from my second chakra, not fueling my ovaries, not keeping my lower back and my hips in a healthy condition and my discs in my back, but instead of that, it's leaving my electromagnetic field and going to you to remind you that I'm angry at you, and to you, and to you, and to every one of you. The only energy I have left over here comes from the quality of my investments, which are in vengeance, if you want the word for this. This is also my center of creativity and birth. Your second chakra is where you attract creative opportunities. What is this? This is your fertility center. This is where creativity and creative ideas come from. Now, I'm going to speak angel to you. And I'm going to say, the time has come for you to have an idea to become a singer or to do open up a shop or whatever it is. Now, I'm going to do the mathematics for you. That idea requires that 70% of your energy be in present time. And instead of that, you've got 60% of your energy going into these lousy investments of trying to let someone who you met 20 years ago still know you're angry? This is what you're doing with your life force? And that imbalance of what you could be giving birth to versus what you are investing in is recorded in this part of your biology. So you have endometriosis. And you have impotency problems. And you have prostate problems. And you have bowel problems. And this is where it comes from. Exactly these types of energetic investments. Okay? This is also the part of your body where what you learn first is tribal justice. Long before you learn anything about forgiveness, you learn about tribal justice. And tribal justice is essentially Hammurabi's code, an eye for an eye. And what Hammurabi's code represented thousands of years ago when it was constructed on these early tablets of stone, so to speak, was an attempt to articulate some kind of law of balanced cause and effect. You don't take more than was taken from you. You don't violate more than you were violated. But you have a right to take an eye if an eye was taken. Now, you're taught that long before you're taught anything about forgiveness. So that by the time you're taught forgiveness, it doesn't make any sense to you. You've already invested your circuits into an eye for an eye. Not only have you invested your circuits into tribal justice, but an eye for an eye gives you the position that says, you're never the wrong person. You've never done anything to initiate the horrible things that have happened to you. You are always the innocent victim, and you always have the privilege of the victim behind you. Now, how many of you are invested in the privilege of the victim? Right? And how many of you have any bitterness in terms of an eye for an eye towards somebody that you feel that you have been violated and that you feel vengeance towards them? Okay. Well, now, here's what you got to know from now on, and that's that your second chakra is where you are releasing a great deal of your energy to literally record your desire to have negativity happen to that person. That's what you've invested your circuits in. And what you've got to remember is what you harvest psychologically, emotionally, spiritually, and physically is equal to what you invest in. So when you invest your energy in your second chakra into feelings that you are an innocent victim, what you are actually saying to God is this: you screwed up. You made a mistake with my life. You sent horrible people. You create horrible people, obviously, because I'm a good person and they're not. Whereas the rules you claim you are living by are rules that say, I will agree to love everybody or at least feel compassion toward them. I will agree to the perception that everyone you've created because their lives are of value to you. Therefore, they must be of value to me. You are violating the higher truths. So, if you can follow all of this, it can begin to sound like a madhouse, but what it boils down to is that where the trauma comes from in your own suffering so often is that you've invested your energy into perceptions you know are not true, yet you refuse to unplug your circuits because there is a part of you that wants the privilege of human authority and human justice over divine trust. Let me say this again. If you really were to look at your life through a higher lens that said, wait a minute, I think I'm going to live by the perception that no matter what happens, it's all fair, there's a huge karmic ballpark somewhere where everything's worked out perfectly, there's this huge karmic situation that is totally perfect. There's a reason why I've met everybody. I am going to invest my energy in that perception. And that's all there's to it. And I am going to live by that perception. No matter if something is painful or not, right or wrong, up or down, good or bad, all I know is I am now living by the perception that no matter who's in my life, they're there by divine design. That whether or not I'm comfortable is not the measure of whether or not God's behind it. But instead, I have to just live by this perception that the gods don't make mistakes. If I invest in the idea that I've been victimized, I am investing in a perception that is completely contra this truth. And that investment is going to come out of my circuits, and it's going to cost me in my second chakra, in my ovarian area, in my sexual genital area, in my lower back. Let me translate that to more practical terms. What that means is it also makes me receptive and susceptible to the tribal consequences of those beliefs, which means that I will be more susceptible to a tribal epidemic than someone who doesn't believe that. Translate it. I will be more susceptible to anything from the flu to AIDS to a financial crash to an earthquake, any kind of tribal event. Whereas, let me give you the other side, the delicious side. The tribe said, I'm sorry, healings can't take place like that. They can to you if you're not plugged into the tribal mind. The other side is like, well, of course it can't to you because you're plugged into a system that says, no, it takes time and doctors and da-da-da-da. Whereas if you're plugged in to a system that says, no, in my tribe, anything's possible in the blink of an eye, then that's exactly what will happen to you. You know, when I was first starting my publishing company, living in New Hampshire, we had to, of course, go for investors. And in those early months, we had to get jobs doing other things because we had no money, to be perfectly direct. Now, according to tribal rhythm, not having any money and going out and starting a business was a stupid thing to do. Whereas I was never plugged into that. Therefore, that did not apply to me. The consequences of that belief did not apply to me. What was I plugged into? I was plugged into this perception. You want me to do this? You'll take care of it. You'll provide for me. So it is now February 1983. And I had less than $200 and no job. And we had yet to get any investment capital for Still Point. So I said to God, you got to do something. I mean, you got to do something. So I phoned home, and I did something that I never did before and haven't done since. And that's that I asked my mother if she could take $3,000 out of her bank account with my father and not tell him. Well, you know, she said, oh, honey, I don't know. I don't know. And they thought that I had gone off the deep end and what's this, I'm living on a farm. And I tell you something. This is how tribal I was. I was plugged into the perception that I had rented a house with a front lawn. It took me 2 months to realize that I'd rented a farm. And how I realized, I was sitting there one day and I saw a barn. It had been there all along. And I went, barn, farm, farm, barn. I went over to the phone and I dialed my real estate person and I said, did I rent a house with a front lawn? Or do I have a farm? There was a pause. And then this person said, you rented a 30-acre farm. And I said, I have a farm. You don't understand. I'm from Chicago. And people like me, in my family, we don't even know what a farm is. We have never been on a farm. 1 week later, in my little village, there were a lot of dairy farmers. And the farmer down the road, his cows got out. And they walked the highway, right? And they walked around the bend, and they were all over the front part of my house. You have to understand that I was not yet plugged into the reality that I had a farm. I was still living in a city. I had a house in the front lawn. I'm living in the world behind my eyes. Right? So here cows are everywhere. And this guy is driving his car, and he drives around, and he almost hits one. And, of course, he pulls into in front of my house, thinking these had to be my cows because they were all of mine. So he leans on his horn, and I walk on my back porch. I got a cup of coffee, naturally, in my hand. And he says, lady, get your cows out of the road. Behind my eye. I don't own any cows. I said, what cows? They're everywhere. And I'm standing on my back porch, and I said, what cows? Right? They were everywhere. And he's standing there looking at me, and he says, are you nuts? And he says, and then I saw them. Right? And I said, oh, look at cows. Where did they come from? Cows. Look at, and I'm announcing it to him as if he'd never seen a cow in the whole of his life. And I said, cows, where did they come? And so now we're back to the fact that I have no money, can't pay for this. I'm living on this farm that I thought it was a house with a front lawn. And I said to God, all right, I am traumatized enough here and I don't have any money. And you've got to do something. Now then. In my world, I was plugged into the fact that that situation could be resolved in the blink of an eye. In the blink of an eye. Now, if I had been plugged into who would help me and I would need to get a job and make money, I would have had it answered that way. I would have been in trouble and it would have taken me months to be able to pay that bill. But I was plugged into, you want me here, you reward me instantly. Because I'm doing exactly what you want, therefore you cover my rear end. Now, what happened was, the next day my mother gets a phone call from a stockbroker. This is 1983. Way back in the 1960s, when she was working with my uncle, at a grocery store. My family comes from a long line of grocers. They're from Europe, and they opened up a grocery store in Chicago. The stockbroker came in, and my mother, in the show of independence, decided to invest her paycheck in this stock that was then selling for 3 cents a share. She came home and announced that she bought this penny stock, and we teased her without mercy. So much so that no one ever brought it up again until 20 years later. The day after, I said, do something. And this stockbroker called and said to my mother, you know that stock? And she, of course, she was mortified. She said, I don't even want to talk about it. She said, well, you might. It's up to $5.90 a share. Do you know that? She said, sell. And she then said to my father, you know what? I think I'm going to give each of the kids a gift of $3,000. And he said, you do whatever you want. Okay? Now, in my world, I am still plugged into that perception. But if I had been plugged into the perception that prayers and financial issues take a long time to resolve, that's exactly how it would have worked itself out. That's the second chakra. Now, this is also the part of you that is plugged into all of your issues about childhood and mothering in terms of your capacity to nurture others is in this part of your body. And your capacity to want to be nurtured is in this part of your body. It's a very rich and sensual part of your body. This is, of course, your area of sexual energy, sexuality, sexual liberalism, whatever, sexual issues. This is all in this part of your body. The second chakra, I like to also teach the fact that this is the part of your body that has so much to do with your occupation and your creativity. I can't emphasize that enough. This is the part of yourself that longs to give birth to ideas, to take ideas and get them into the physical form, and they come through here. I think a lot of the massive increase in diseases and ovarian cancers and prostate cancers have to do with the fact that this is the part of the body where we have creative abortions. Right? Now think about it. I want to run you through the body very fast. If I were your angel and I gave you an idea, it comes into the top of your head, your inspiration zone, in your head. And then the idea goes from your head to your throat. Do you want to do it? Do you want to choose, make a choice, your willpower? And you say, yeah, I don't mind. Then you drop it to your heart. How do you feel about it? Yeah, it feels fine. Now, what all of this has in common above your waist is that it doesn't cost you anything. You can have a million ideas, and not only does it not cost you any money, it doesn't change your life. It doesn't change your life until you have to actually do something about them. Then they begin the journey below the waist. And they go into your third chakra. The third chakra is the self. How does this idea influence you, and what does it demand of you in order to make it happen? And then you move it to the second chakra, which is, and how much will it cost? Who's in charge and who's going to pay for it? Once it gets to that center of the body, you begin to be a completely different person. You suddenly find yourself suspicious of people, whereas before there was any money involved, you were close as anything. Now, why do you think that is? It's because your tribe taught you, and you completely buy into sociological teachings that where there's money, there is no trust. As soon as an idea gets brought into its financial and competitive format in the second chakra, it often gets aborted. And if you get a lot of your creative ideas aborted at this stage, you are going to log those abortions, and those abortions can produce tumors. They can produce all kinds of disorders in the sexual genital area of the body. It's interesting, isn't it? You wouldn't think that you would suffer from the same scar tissue in terms of abortion that your body records creative abortions with the same passion that it records physical abortions. And on the subject of physical abortions, I am pro-choice, as it were. However, I'm also pro-conscious choice. And what I mean by that is your second chakra is attached to the spirits that you agree to incarnate, to take on, to carry, both paternally and maternally. And when you have an unconscious abortion, when you abort without closure, you can remain attached to that spirit through your second chakra. I have done a number of readings where women have had all kinds of bleeding disorders, and what they are attached to is the unfinished business that they had with an abortion. That spirit needs to be brought to closure. You need to say to that spirit, it's not the right time, leave me. There's a magnificent physician by the name of Gladys McGarry. She lives in Phoenix, Arizona. And Gladys has done a number of fantastic research projects with women in this regard, in which when they need to have an abortion, instead of going through the physical act of abortion, she has them do an energetic communication with the fetus they're carrying, saying, I can't have you now. And the vast majority of these women miscarry. And the understanding is the spirit has agreed, okay, fine, I can accept a conscious renegotiation. You know? And I think that when you think of the energetic attachments, this is also the part of your body that can be attached to relationships with people who have died, your first and second chakra, with whom you don't have closure. And I will say again and again about this, that a ritual brings about closure. Light a candle, sit down, invoke their energy, and say what you need to say, bring about closure that way. Now, as I wrap up my information on these two sections, I want to talk about the fact that the first and second chakra also represent your need, our need, for the sacred, and specifically what face of the sacred. This is the part of our body that needs sacred ritual. This is the part of our body that needs the experience of taking and making a vow and keeping it. This is the part of our body that needs to pray together with other people. Right? When I teach about losing your spirit to the tribal energy, I also need to tell you how empowering it is to plug your energy into tribal beliefs that are appropriate for you and that nurture you. And I will tell you that one of the tribal needs that we all share is we all have a need to experience the sacred in a group. That is a need. Now, whether or not you pray with a group or meditate, I don't care what word you, but whether or not you have any kind of rapport with a group, then listen to a Hildegard of Bingen tape. Do anything that puts you into a daily routine of the sacred. One of the fundamental needs of your first and second chakra is to have a daily nurturing rapport with the sacred. You need this. You need a ritual that enhances your spirituality. This past summer, very quickly, 10:30 at night, I stopped at a White Hen. While I was in there, I look over my right shoulder. There's a 14-year-old girl. She's got her lip pierced with a ring through here and a dot through her nose. And I looked at her, and I said, why'd you do this to yourself? And she looked at me, and she said, I don't know. I said, what do you mean you don't know? I said, look at me, take a deep breath, open your arms, and give me an answer. She said, well, I guess I like it. I said, you like doing this to your body, scarring your body? And she points over to the guy sweeping the floor in the White Hen. he's got a bullet through the lower lip here, he's got one here, he's got enough holes in his ears, and she points to him and laughs. I said, you too? Then I'm paying for my iced tea, and the guy behind the corner has his baseball cap on backwards, he's got all his ears pierced, he's got a hole in his nose, and he's got hair coming out to the top of his head. He says to me, hey lady, are you from another planet? I said, let me get this straight here. I am looking at you three people who have scarred yourself, poking holes all over your face, and I'm from another planet. So I looked at these two kids. I said, you both, out, march outside now. I want you with me. So they walk out in the parking lot, and there's a whole group of them. And I said, right, now I know tribal law. So I know they are a tribe. So I said to them, take me into your tribe. Can I ask you some questions? I know that I have to be tribally initiated, right? They're not going to let me walk in, so they're going to throw me something stupid and see if I will handle it. And I looked to see who their eyes turned to see who was the leader amongst them. And he stepped forward, and he gave me a real smart-ass remark. And I said, okay, I can accept that. And I said, then I looked at him and I said, I want to understand you and your friends. Why are you doing this to yourselves? I said, the reason I ask, I said, is you think this is new, but putting holes in your body has always been a sacred activity in many tribes. I don't know if you know that. And I said, I'm wondering why you're doing that now. To which he said, I don't believe in religion. We don't. I said, I didn't say religion. I said, spirituality. And he said, well, we don't believe in spirit. I said, you would if I taught you. And he looked at me and said, then teach us. I looked at this and I thought, my God, they are starving for the sacred. There is no tribal sacredness left that they are plugging into. So they're plugging into street gangs, all kinds of forms of tribal power that has no real power because there's no sacred power left. And we look at our spiritual tribes and they're failing us left, right, and center. And what I'm saying to you is when you evaluate what you need for yourself, I urge you, when you begin to think, what am I plugging myself into? That you take a look at the fact that you need to be plugged into sacred rituals that mean something to you. And that in your second chakra, this records the vows you make to other people. This records a sense of honor that you have with other people. If you give your word, it's recorded here in your second chakra that you gave your word to someone. I urge you to keep it. I urge you to recognize that your spirit and your body thrives on living honorably, which is something I'm sorry to say our culture has long forgotten. Now then, the third chakra. I love the third chakra because it's so obviously what it is. The third chakra is your center of self-esteem or your lack thereof. Now, this is the part of your body where you register every memory you have of being criticized, everybody whose approval you need is in this part of the body. Now, let's weave this into the second and the first chakra because now I want you to begin to work with these as a system because they're all part of your external reality. Your third chakra and your sense of what you define as being attractive. Now, if you define being attractive as being anorexic and permanently looking 24 and whatever else you come up with as your components of being attractive, then mind you, you're operating on what the society today has decided is attractive. And what that means is you have allowed your spirit to leave your solar plexus and plug in to these images that are temporarily surrounding the social mind that said, unless I accomplish that image, I am not attractive. And that part of yourself that relates to those images is your third chakra. This is the part of yourself where you develop a rapport with your own integrity. This is your center of integrity. This is your center of personal honor. And your center of a personal honor code with yourself. This is your center of ethics. This is your center of what you will negotiate for yourself. Where you draw the line. For example, you may say to yourself, I will never ever be controlled by money. If I need to do something or go someplace, I will not be controlled by someone else having financial authority over me. Then the day comes where you're in a job. You hate your job. You hate it. It's costing you your sanity. It's costing you your well-being. And you say to God, get me out of here. And your angel says, quit. Your task is to quit. I'll take care of the details. And all of a sudden, you find yourself not quitting. You are now doing exactly what you said you would never do. You are allowing yourself to be controlled financially. Now, what do you think that's going to do to you? What that means is you are violating your sense of self. It's as if you take a knife and cut open your abdominal area and allow your energy to pour out of your abdominal area and into that situation. You are de-energizing yourself as rapidly as you can. Let's say you are involved in a relationship, and in this relationship you're with somebody whose approval you need desperately. In order to get the approval, you start chipping away little by little, and one day this person says to you, I don't like the way you're wearing your hair. I think you should part it on this side. So to please this person, you change the part in your hair. Seems like a small thing to do. Symbolically, it's an enormous thing. Why? Because what you've said is, I agree with you, the way I am is not good enough. And I will let you remodel me. So little by little, you begin to negotiate your sense of self to please this other person. Now, this is a dual violation. It is not just a one-way violation. Your angel will immediately begin to give you guidance that says, get out of this relationship. You are not supposed to negotiate your soul to anybody. Simultaneously, this other person's angel will say, I've got to get you out of this relationship. You're not supposed to violate somebody that way, the dual relationship. So all the guidance you get in that relationship will be to direct you to either heal that or end the relationship. But you will never be directed spiritually to remain in a relationship in which you are negotiating your spirit in order to stay in that relationship. The other person is not supposed to violate you. So both of you are participating in an act of violation. One because you are giving up your spirit and the other because you're taking it. The dual violation. This sense of self is probably one of the areas where I see people lose their power more often and more rapidly than anywhere else, and that's in what they will do to keep another person in their lives. It is amazing to me how much of your body, your mind, your spirit, and your energy you will negotiate to keep another person in your life, even if you know that other person doesn't belong there. Even if you hope it works out perfectly, from the time you are involved with someone, your angel will tell you, your intuitive system, your energetic data will tell you whether or not this is the right person for you. It's instantaneous. You will know in an instant, and from that instant beginning, you are either in the process of encouraging a yes response or denying that you heard a no. What I find so rich is this is your center of survival intuition. Your third chakra, your solar plexus, this is your center of survival intuition. You are born intuitive. You have intuitional energy. What is intuitional energy? Energetic data. What is energetic data? I can call it your angel talking to you. If you don't like that, we'll call it electromagnetic information. If you don't like that, we'll call it energetic. I don't care what you call it. It is the non-physical or energetic part of events, relationships, activities, thoughts, comes into your system constantly and feeds your perceptual system. The way it comes into you is in your third chakra. From the moment you walked in this building today, even before you came upstairs, your third chakra came up here ahead of you and scanned this room for where you should sit. So that when you came up here, while you may think you have never seen this room before, energetically, it's familiar. And how do you know that? Because energetically you said to yourself, do I feel comfortable? And if you got a yes, this feels just fine. It's because your third chakra, a part of your energy, was up here before. It could have been here last night. Your energetic system chose the chair you'd sit on, chose who you would be sitting next to, and by the time your bodies walked into this room, this scene of your body sitting on these chairs was the last scene of the film, not the first. The rest of it, the beginning, the energetic origins, that's where the interesting part is. We were talking to each other long before we walked into this room on the energetic level. You do this continually. And your third chakra, your intuitive survival information center, operates constantly. Every single time you meet somebody, you automatically ask the question, am I safe? Will this person harm me? Will this person be a friend? Will this person be a permanent part of my life? Will this person cost me money? Will this person make me money? Will my family like this person? You go through these questions, a variation of these questions. You don't even realize you're doing it. And this part of your body is providing you with an intuitive answer to all of these questions with every single person you meet. All the time. This is the part of the body that says to you, don't drive down this street. This is the part that says, go left, go right. You don't even realize that you are operating on intuitive data 99% of the time because you think that intuitive data should be flashy, should be loud, should be visual. Somehow or other, Hollywood has gotten its hands on the way intuitive data should look, and that is a sham. The reality is that you have been intuitively guided so strongly all your life that clear intuition is something you are not even aware of. The few times you are aware of it, where you have a memory of hearing a voice say, hey, turn left, is a rare exception when their wiring is off, not when you're suddenly on. You shouldn't be aware of this information at all if it's done right. I am completely demythologizing the nonsense that has been built around intuitive perception or energetic perception. It is absolutely the most subtle, non-visual, non-present energy and information you will ever have in part of your life, which is why when you say things like, should I trust this person? And you think that you should get a, yes, you should, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, or the door opens and suddenly a sign drops from the ceiling that says, don't trust, end relationship. Knock off what you think you should expect from the energetic world as proof that it is functioning and functioning well. That is nonsense. It is subtle. It is consistent. There isn't one of you anywhere that has not had the experience of knowing instantly off the bat when you shouldn't do something. You just know it. Or that you should do something. Or that you're unhappy. How many of you know when you're unhappy? You need a vision for that? Okay. You are already so intuitive that you're miserable. Okay? And what's driving you crazy is that you haven't got the courage to act on your intuition. that what you are looking for is a vision that says, do this, and at the end of this, you'll make this much money, this person will be waiting for you, you'll never be lonely, and you'll never be broke, and you'll never be in pain. Am I right? And what do those things have in common? They're all below the waist. So that your entire sense of how you want to invest your spirit has to do with the values below your waist, as opposed to your full chakra system. Right? So what you're really saying is, your third chakra is invested in physical outcome. You are directing your intuitive energy and training it for physical safety information versus spiritual direction. When I talk to you about your third chakra, the thing I want you to pay attention to is no matter what you do, you are intuitive. And that your survival intuitive system is always operating. What compromises it is that this is your center of fear. Fear about your personal safety. This is where you are invested in fears. Now, you probably have never thought about the fact that you've actually invested circuits of your energy into fear. These are the kinds of fears that you would invest in. The fear of being rejected, the fear of being fired, the fear of being alone, the fear of being abandoned, the fear of being criticized. Are any of these fears, do they have any authority in your life at all? Any of you? It's this part of your body. I want to snap my fingers and I want to show you the energetic side of what I'm talking about. If I took you right in front of me and said, all right, now then, let's imagine that 20% of your circuits are going into the fear of being criticized. And then another percentage of your circuits are invested in the fear of being abandoned or being alone, being isolated from the crowd. And then another percentage of your circuits are going into the fear of what if you disappoint others. All of the fears that go with the third chakra and your center of self-esteem. Now then, my job as your angel is to get you to unplug from those fears. Because so long as you're invested in those fears, you will attract to yourself relationships and people that do exactly what those fears tell you. So long as you are invested in the fear of being criticized, you will attract to yourself someone who will criticize you. Not to punish you, but to get you to the point where you finally say, hey, I have had enough of this. I don't want this anymore. There is something wrong with me that I am doing this. And you get to the point where you unplug from that fear and that person, that type of relationship. And if you actually could see how you're plugged into these fears, what you first recognize is that these qualify for false gods. All right? Now, let me work this through for you. What if the time came in your life when an opportunity that you didn't see coming was meant to be given to you? That opportunity is going to come through your third chakra. You're going to get a gut hunch. Something's wrong. I gotta get out of here. I gotta move on. And your angel says, okay, let's go. And then your angel says, it's time for you to move to West by God, Virginia. Trust us, something's waiting for you there. And you get up, you feel it in every part of your body. It came in through your third chakra and it penetrated deep. And all of a sudden, you look at where you are and you think, this doesn't feel right, and my house doesn't look the same, and my job doesn't feel right. And all of a sudden, every place you go, places that have been familiar to you for 20 years, are one notch off center. They just feel a little bit odd. Foreign, distant. You can't feel them the way you used to. So you say, what am I supposed to do? And you get this feeling, I said, go to Virginia. And you think, that can't be right. And then what do? You run it by your fears, not your faith. You run it by your fear of failure, your fear of being criticized, your fear of not being able to take care of yourself, your fear of being alone. And you add it all up and you think, hell no, I'm not going anywhere. And your angel sits back down on the couch and says, oh, brother, here we go again. Another 4 years of you praying for guidance and me trying to figure out how to get through to you. All right? And then what your angel would do is this. That does it. This is warfare. And your angel says, that's it. I've had it with you and your allegiance to the fear of failure. I am going to make sure you fail, but good, and get it over with. And the next thing you know, this marvelous schemata happens so that you fall flat on your face. You finally think, well, if that's what failure feels like, I can handle that. What else is there? You know? And what happens in the process is you develop a sense of self-esteem and confidence. You begin to develop a very different sense of yourself. This third chakra is a major turning point, not only in your sense of self-esteem, but in your sense of spirituality. This is the turning point between religion and spirituality. It's in this part of your body, literally. Why do I say that? Because we have to birth ourselves. We have to work at becoming an individual. Right? You're not born an individual. That's nonsense. You're born a tribal member. You're born a part of a group. And as part of a group, you have a group identity. And then if in this lifetime you're meant to move on, what will happen is you'll start feeling like, I don't fit in. I don't fit in. Maybe you were born feeling you never fit in. If that's the case, what happens is that's a blessing that says it's time for you to develop a sense of self where your capacity to choose your own reality is separate from your tribe doing it for you. Okay? Now, when you're tribal, you will be religious, but you won't be spiritual. You'll follow tribal rituals, but you will keep God at a distance. What kind of a distance? You'll keep God at a tribal distance that says, in order for me to have any contact with God, I've got to be in a certain building, watching a certain type of person pray for me, because I myself don't have access to God. And you'll want to keep it that way because in return, you will get to believe that therefore God can't have access to you. This is why you want tribal religion, okay? And then what happens one day when you decide, wait a minute here, I think now I want to be able to have direct contact myself. You have to birth a very different sense of the self. And what you have to go through is a very painful third chakra experience, which is that all the forms of tribal authority will have to fail you. Your investment in tribal rules, and what kind of tribal rules? Let me give you one, for example, marriage. Marriage is a tribal archetype that was designed for tribal survival. What kind of survival? Biological survival? Tribal survival, cultural survival. But that's essentially what marriage was designed for. Now, according to what your tribe teaches you, if you do this, that, and the other, someday your prince will come along, or someday your damsel, you'll find your... You know how much you could laugh about this? I'm telling you, you are controlled by these mythologies. So, what happens is, here comes the next level of your evolution, which is you want to make the shift from working with tribal power to the power of the self. In order to make that shift, the tribal system has to fail you. I want to repeat that, which means everything the tribe told you, which is, if you go to school and you get a job and you meet the right woman and you meet the right man, this will happen, that will happen, and you'll be perfectly happy. You won't be perfectly happy. Or if they said, look, you go to college and you do this and you do that and you'll find the perfect job, you won't be happy in that job. Everything the tribe told you will not work. And it's not because you are meant to be disappointed in the tribe, disappointed in your family. What's really going on is it's your signal that you are no longer meant to evolve within the group mind, but rather unplug your circuits, your tribal, your sexual, financial, and your sense of self-esteem. That your self-esteem, instead of being based upon your capacity to please others, it has to be based on your capacity to follow your own self. Right? So in order to do that, you're going to encounter a situation where you literally will find yourself disappointing your tribe tremendously. Tremendously. Your tribe will say something to you like, after all we've done for you, how could you do this? I think one of my very favorite stories in the whole wide world of exactly this kind of third chakra situation and then resurrection. I went to do a workshop down in Mexico. At this place where I was doing a workshop was a person who was not in my workshop. She just happened to be at this place. She was Jewish. She was from New York, and her name is Ruth, and she was in a wheelchair. And she had a personality that was absolutely fantastic. One morning, I got up early, and I went on the patio, and Ruth was sitting on the patio, and she was listening to a cassette tape, and her back was to me. And I was looking at her in that wheelchair, and I thought to myself, my God, how could you stand being in that wheelchair? And she turned around and she looked at me and she said, you're wondering how I can stand being in this wheelchair, aren't you? I was so astounded by that I said, guilty as charged. I was. And she says, well, come on over here, I'll talk to you. So I walked over. Ruth was 74. And she said to me, you believe in angels? And I said, yeah. And she said, well, come on, sit down. She starts telling me the story. That she married or young, did exactly what her tribe told her to do. And then her husband died on her when she was 38 years old, leaving her with two children. Now, her tribe had not prepared her for widowhood. They never told her that might happen. So the interesting thing, this is my language, not hers. She said to me, after my husband died, I didn't know what to do. Nobody had prepared me for that. And so she said, I did what I had to do to survive. If she needed to steal, she stole. Now, let me give you the translation here. Because her tribe had never prepared her for this, that gave her permission to break laws she knew she shouldn't break while saying she had a right to break them and it wasn't really her breaking them. Are you following this? Because the tribe never prepared her, therefore, what else could she do? This is the child archetype, saying, you never prepared me for a more difficult situation, therefore, I'm not responsible. This is your fault because you never told me how to maneuver here. Right. So, she raises her two kids. She raises them in an Orthodox Jewish home. And her daughter goes and becomes a Buddhist. Right. So her daughter comes and visits her every now and again, and she said to me, I looked at my daughter and I said, how could you do this? How could you do this to me after all I've done for you, after what I had to go through to make sure you had a good Jewish upbringing? How could you do this? Now, translate. The person is saying to you, how could you do this after all we've been through to do this? They are gathering as many circuits of energy as they can to try and stop you, to try and jam your circuits from you leaving a tribal energetic system. All right? From now on, you've got to picture this. So even if it's one person sitting in front of you, you've got a million circuits coming at you. So one day she says to her daughter, after she went through the, how could you do this to me? She said, you're on drugs. You've taken drugs. And her daughter said, yeah, I've taken some drugs. So Ruth, sitting in this wheelchair at age 74, looks at me in Mexico and says, so I said to my daughter, get me some. And so her daughter brings home some LSD. Now, what have we got here? We got a situation where a tribal authority figure is now breaking all the rules. What is significant about this? This is a third chakra extraordinary experience. Because she's giving herself permission to break the rules, she is giving herself permission for a reality she didn't even know to exist to come close to her. She's now saying to the gods, I don't need to have you in an orthodox way anymore. Come to me any way you can. All right? So she takes this LSD, and she has an out-of-body experience. And Ruth says to me, there I am. She says, I look, and I see an angel. And the angel said to me, Ruthie, Ruthie, do you know how hard it is to be your angel? And she says, Ruth said, look, she says, this angel said to her, look, I got to show you something. Look, that's how you are to me. And Ruth said, she points, and she sees a statue of herself wrapped in rubber bands, all tied up like this, like the inside of a golf ball. And her angel says, Ruthie, that's how tight it is. And every one of those rubber bands are one of your fears. And I got to get through all that to get through to you. And Ruth said, I look at my angel, I said, so what are we going to do? And her angel produced a huge set of scissors and said, here, you want to free yourself? So in this out-of-body experience, Ruth goes up to this statue of herself and cuts all these rubber bands and said she felt absolutely electric, alive for the first time in her life. What was she? Her circuits were disconnected from every fear that had ever had authority over her. For the first time, she was fully complete. She was in a kundalini experience. She was in ecstasy. And so the angel said, Ruthie, I got to tell you something. You're going to have some tough years ahead. You're going to be in a wheelchair. And this is something you're just going to have to go through because of other reasons, karmically, whatever. But I need to tell you that. And so Ruthie said to the angel, okay, will you be there? And the angel says, I'll always be there. So Ruthie said to me that her angel sent her back into her body. She said for weeks after that, she was higher than a kite, and nothing in her life was the same. And nothing in her life was the same. Why? Because she had unplugged from that tribal world and was living for the first time in the world behind her eye, the place we're going next. Everything I've taught you is the world in front of your eye, how you attach to external people, places, things for power, instead of attaching to the world inside of yourself, so that the world outside can be close to you, but not in you, but not of you. Huh? She was free. So she said to me, so you think I'm crippled now? She says, no, no, no. I was crippled. That woman taught me more in that one experience. That's your third chakra. Her sense of self-esteem, her sense of personal dignity, her sense of honor was completely intact. Now, I want to tell you that when you live with a personal honor code, and when you live with yourself intact from that point of view, I have to say that I believe that that is the essence of what we call a miraculous experience. That is the essence of spontaneity. That is the essence of what makes for the presence of the gods next to you in the instant blink of an eye. That it doesn't require that you light a million candles and spend years on your knees. That's for amateurs. That's if you want to go the tribal route. Instead, I urge you to begin to take a look at what it means to work with, first of all, recognize you've got to have a third chakra honor code that includes a sense of integrity, that includes a sense of dignity, so that you know that if you give your word, you keep it. Not because you're afraid of what they will say, but because you know the energetic consequences. This is what the third chakra is all about. Your sense of personal dignity. And that from now on, every single time you're with somebody and someone asks your opinion and you find yourself lying about your opinion because you're afraid of the consequences, you pay attention to that now, because now you know it's biologically recorded in your system. Every time you criticize another person or judge another person, you pay attention to that because you are releasing a part of your spirit with the command to harm another person. When you judge another person, when you criticize another person, you are releasing your spirit with the command to harm another person because you don't know what's going on in that person's life. I'm going to share one other story with you because I want you to have this visual in your head when you think of your third chakra. I had this experience of doing a workshop in London. On my way back, I was being driven by this woman who shared the story that she was in a workshop where a woman told of how she had been in a car accident and was killed. She had a near-death experience. And she found herself hovering over her car. And while she was hovering over, she could hear the responses of everybody else backed up behind her. She could hear people saying, oh, damn, this is just what I need. I, you know, da-da-da-da. The responses people had about the car accident. But in the fifth car, she saw light pouring out of the top, going way up into the heavens, and then being directed directly to her. And she thought, what is that? And the moment she asked that question, she was present, and what she heard was this woman, this perfect stranger, praying for her. Those prayers were instantly transmitted. Boom! Went straight to her. But she heard this person saying, I don't know who this woman is, but if my prayers can help her in this moment. Prayer, third chakra. I send my energy, my grace, to help this person. So she took down the license plate number of that car while she was in her near-death state. She was called back into her body because it wasn't her time. She was critically injured. Took her months to recover, but she had the license plate number. She ended up showing up on her doorstep with a bouquet of flowers. Thank you for your prayers. From now on, you pay attention to every thought you send someone from your third chakra. And you recognize when you send a drop of love, a piece of grace, it is delivered instantly. It is delivered instantly. And when you criticize, you are literally held accountable for how that critical energy may have been the straw that broke that person's back in that moment. Maybe some days when you are feeling really low, for all you know, you're absorbing a lot of negative energy. When in fact, if you'd pray, God, surround me with positive energy, I'll transmit it. My job is to transmit it to others, and I trust that you will bring it to me, that you will return to me what I invest in others, that your investment of feeling depressed is an investment of having invested negative energy in thoughts people give to you. Someone says, why don't you become a singer? Why don't you try this? Oh, no, I failed. You're investing your energy in the experience that was yesterday. It has nothing to do with today. You have to invest your energy in present time with the sense of yesterday was yesterday, today is today, and I will invest my energy in people. And if I look at someone and think, I don't know why they're doing what they're doing, but I'm not going to judge it anymore. I'm not going to do that. I will not invest my energy in judging another person because the investment doesn't pay back well. Just look at it from an economic point of view. It's a lousy investment, and it's going to cost you a lot more than it will ever cost them. Whereas, one kind thought that says, you confuse the hell out of me, and I bless you. I'm out of here. Bless them and keep going. Because that's what helps your soul, that's what helps your body, and that's what helps your entire sense of guidance. That's what helps your life and theirs. Just live. You cannot begin to imagine how different your life is if you walk around with the idea that you haven't got a clue what the outcome will be. And whatever you do, don't judge experiences that come your way. Don't make that mistake. Instead, say, every single thing is potentially the best thing that ever happened to you. You tell yourself that. That is the perception you want to invest your energy in. Everything is potentially the best person you ever met and the best thing that ever happened to you. And that's how you're investing in it. That's the perception that gets your spirit. And you let the gods take it from there. You let heaven take your energy and create the experiences that come as a result of what you've invested your energy in through your third chakra. It's going to take a lot to manage this because this is your first, second, and third chakra have in common the relationship that you have to time and space, to your physical reality. When we deal with the fourth, fifth, and sixth, we begin to go into altered states of time, into different places. But your first, second, and third chakras have in common the physical survival reality of your life. So this part of your body has a lot of authority over you, and it takes a lot of work to pull your spirit back from external things having voltage over you. You just don't wake up one morning and decide, well, I think I'm going to decide that everybody is not going to have authority over me and I'm going to follow my intuition. You just don't change your rules overnight, but you do start one choice at a time, one perception at a time. And whatever you do, bear in mind one spiritual truth. The gods play in divine paradox. What you think is a small choice is always a big one. What you think is a big one is always a small one. Divine paradox. The true power is always hiding in the bushes. The gods never show off. They don't have to.
This concludes Tape 2 of Energy Anatomy with Carolyn Mace. Our program continues with Tape 3.